This is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Friedel, Katie Weaver, and Jill Robbins. Later, we will present American Stories. But first, here is Dan Friedel.
Scientists near Seattle in the U.S. state of Washington say they have found the first murder hornet of 2021. The stinging insects are actually called Asian giant hornets. They gained a lot of attention on social media in the spring of 2020 when people reacted to their arrival as another sign of a strange year already marked by the COVID-19 health crisis. The 5-centimeter-long insects do not belong in North America. They are considered invasive. They are also the largest hornets in the world. They can kill smaller honeybees that farmers depend on to pollinate crops. The hornets got their nickname because they kill the bees by cutting their heads off. Scientists who study insects are known as entomologists. They say the discovery is the first of the year and not related to the hornets found in 2019 and 2020 closer to Canada. However, the insect experts said the hornet was dried out and is probably left over from an earlier season. The hornet is male, and the scientists said male hornets do not usually show up until July. Dr. Osama El Lisi works to expel invasive species for the U.S. Department of Agriculture. He called the discovery perplexing. It is not known how the hornet got to the town of Marysville, about 50 kilometers north of Seattle. Entomologists say the hornets are hitchhikers. They probably come across the Pacific Ocean on ships carrying goods or crops. Sven Spischiger is an entomologist for the state. He called the hornets' arrival in North America a side effect of international trade. Scientists looked at the insect for the first time on June 8th and confirmed it was one of the giant hornets on June 11th. They are now trying to find out if a group of insects is living closer to Seattle than they had thought. The experts said the hornet does not look like the ones found in 2019 and 2020. Those had orange coloring around the middle part of their bodies. They believe this hornet came from a country in southern Asia. The entomologists will set up traps in the area and ask people to look out for the insects. The hornets are on the USDA list of harmful insect pests, which means the state is permitted to kill them. Spischiger said he and the other scientists never would have found the hornet without the help of regular people living in the area. I'm Dan Friedel.
In a huge, quiet dance space in Buenos Aires, Argentina, the tables are put away. In an area for musicians, a piano sits unused. Electronic sound equipment nearby is unconnected to power. The empty dancing place is called the Veruda Tango Club. It shows the effects of the COVID-19 crisis on performers of a dance form based on close physical contact. Like many other public spaces, the Veruda Tango Club has been closed since March 8, 2020. Argentine officials severely restricted public activity in hopes of limiting the spread of COVID-19. The club used to admit hundreds of tango dancers between Wednesday and Sunday. For those of us who make a living from tango, our self-esteem is on the floor, said Horacio Godoy, a dancer, historian, and club organizer. We are more emotionally than financially bankrupt, he added. COVID-19 also forced Argentina to close its borders. This has hurt the tango business. Foreign visitors provide a lot of support for the industry. International performances by Argentine tango dancers also have been canceled, as their country continues to face high numbers of coronavirus infections. Argentina has had more than 80,000 confirmed COVID-19 deaths. Godoy earns some money by teaching tango online to foreigners. He said the city's assistance program for dancers and musicians does not provide enough money to pay for Veruda's costs. Of 18 employees, only 3 have kept their jobs. The city of Buenos Aires can't offer history like Rome and Paris. It doesn't have a beach to offer like in the Caribbean. It doesn't have gastronomy on offer like Italy. It doesn't have waterfalls or glaciers. The city of Buenos Aires has tango, he said. The Federal Assembly of Tango Workers said the industry used to employ around 7,000 people in Argentina. But since the start of the COVID-19 health crisis, one-fifth of Buenos Aires' 200 tango clubs have closed permanently. Before the pandemic, there were about 40 tango footwear and clothing companies. Now, about 12 remain. Although tango is the most famous part of Argentine culture, the industry does not get any special government support. Tango workers suffered from permanent job insecurity long before the pandemic, said Diego Benbasset, a musician with the Misteriosa Buenos Aires Orchestra and a spokesman for the Tango Workers Union. He said there were never any public policies designed for tango, so that is why we are so vulnerable. Dancer Mora Godoy once taught tango steps to America's former president, Barack Obama. She has received standing ovations for her international performances. But COVID-19 forced her to close her dance school. I did 419 shows with my tango company in 2019. We had done more than 100 in 2020 by the time everything was closed. And this madness, this sadness, this world tragedy began, she said. I'm Katie Weaver. Thank you.
Welcome to Ask a Teacher. This week we answer a question from Shinji in Japan. Here's the question. I think I once learned the expression, how come, which I hear is to explain reasons. For example, how come the schools are canceled? But I rarely come across this construction recently, both in writing and speaking. I am not quite sure about the distinction between this and why. If it would be all right with you, I would appreciate your lesson on it. Sincerely yours, Shinji, Japan. And here's the answer. Dear Shinji, when I started to look into this question, I found that, as you experienced, the expression is not as common now as it was in the past. The first use in American English is recorded around 1848. The highest point for its use was in the 1940s and 1950s. Its use has dropped since 2012. The Merriam-Webster Learner's Dictionary says, how come, is used to ask why something has happened or is true. It is a short form of, how did it come about that? The dictionary also says the expression is usually found in the United States and is used in casual speech. When it appears in news headlines, Merriam-Webster says the purpose is to create a more relaxed quality to the writing. For example, books that have how come in the title seem to be aimed at children. Even presidents sometimes want to sound more casual, as President Barack Obama did in a 2017 campaign speech for the Democratic candidate for governor of Virginia. How come we can't get things through Congress? How come we can't get things through the State House? Because you slept through the election, Obama said. When we use why to ask a question, we must change the usual English word order. Let us begin with the statement, you are cooking lunch. To ask a question with why, you would change the order of the subject, you, and the verb, are, as in this question. Why are you cooking lunch? But when we use how come, the word order of the statement does not change. How come you are cooking lunch? It could be that the simplicity of this question form makes it easier for children to use and gives it a more casual feel. I hope this helps you understand the expression, Shinji. What question do you have about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Jill Robbins.
Now, the special English program, American Stories. Today, we begin a new series from a book by American writer Edgar Rice Burroughs. The book is called A Princess of Mars. It is the first book in a series that Mr. Burroughs wrote about a man who travels to Mars during the last years of the 1800s. There, the man meets strange beings and sees strange sights. At first, he is a captive, then a warrior, and after many battles, a prince of a royal family. Shep O'Neill begins the story of A Princess of Mars.
I am a very old man. How old, I do not know. It is possible I am 100, maybe more. I cannot tell, because I have never aged as other men do. So far as I can remember, I have always been a man of about 30. I appear today as I did 40 years ago. Yet, I feel that I cannot go on living forever. Someday, I will die the real death from which there is no escape. I do not know why I should fear death, I, who have died 2 times, and am still alive. I have never told this story. I know the human mind will not believe what it cannot understand. I cannot explain what happened to me. I can only tell of the 10 years my dead body lay undiscovered in an Arizona cave. My name is John Carter. I am from the state of Virginia. At the close of the Civil War, I found myself without a home, without money, and without work. I decided the best plan was to search for gold in the great deserts of the American Southwest. I spent almost a year searching for gold with another former soldier, Captain James Powell, also of Virginia. We were extremely lucky. In the winter of 1865, we found rocks that held gold. Powell was trained as a mining engineer. He said we had uncovered over $1 million worth of gold in only 3 months. But the work was slow, with only 2 men and not much equipment. So we decided Powell should go to the nearest settlement to seek equipment and men to help us with the work. On March 3rd, 1866, Powell said goodbye. He rode his horse down the mountain toward the valley. I followed his progress for several hours. The morning Powell left was like all mornings in the deserts of the great Southwest, clear and beautiful. Not much later, I looked across the valley. I was surprised to see 3 riders in the same place where I had last seen my friend. After watching for some time, I decided the 3 riders must be hostile Indians. Powell, I knew, was well armed and an experienced soldier, but I knew he would need my aid. I found my weapons, placed a saddle on my horse, and started as fast as possible down the trail taken by Powell. I followed as quickly as I could until dark. About 9 o'clock, the moon became very bright. I had no difficulty following Powell's trail. I soon found the trail left by the 3 riders following Powell. I knew they were Indians. I was sure they wanted to capture Powell. Suddenly, I heard shots far ahead of me. I hurried ahead as fast as I could. Soon, I came to a small camp. 700 Apache Indians were in the center of the camp. I could see Powell on the ground. I did not even think about what to do. I just acted. I pulled out my guns and began shooting. The Apaches were surprised and fled. I forced my horse into the camp and toward Powell. I reached down and pulled him up on the horse by his belt. I urged the horse to greater speed. The Apaches, by now, realized that I was alone and quickly began to follow. We were soon in very rough country. The trail I chose began to rise sharply. It went up and up. I followed the trail for several hundred meters more until I came to the mouth of a large cave. It was almost morning now. I got off my horse and laid Powell on the ground. I tried to give him water, but it was no use. Powell was dead. I laid his body down and continued to the cave. I began to explore the cave. I was looking for a safe place to defend myself, or perhaps for a way out, but I became very sleepy. It was a pleasant feeling. My body became extremely heavy. I had trouble moving. Soon, I had to lay down against the side of the cave. For some reason, I could not move my arms or legs. I lay facing the opening of the cave. I could see part of the trail that had led me here. And now, I could see the Apaches. They had found me, but I could do nothing. Within a minute, one of them came into the cave. He looked at me, but he came no closer. His eyes grew wide. His mouth opened. He had a look of terror on his face. He looked behind me for a moment and then fled. Suddenly, I heard a low noise behind me. So could the rest of the Apaches. They all turned and fled. The sound became louder, but still I could not move. I could not turn my head to see what was behind me. All day I lay like this. I tried again to rise, and again, but I still could not move. Then I heard a sharp sound. It was like a steel wire breaking. I quickly stood up. My back was against the cave wall. I looked down. There before me lay my body. For a few moments, I stood looking at my body. I could not bring myself to touch it. I was very frightened. The sounds of the cave and the sight of my body forced me away. I slowly backed to the opening of the cave. I turned to look at the Arizona night. I could see 1,000 stars. As I stood there, I turned my eyes to a large red star. I could not stop looking at it. It was Mars, the red planet, the red god of war. It seemed to pull me near. Then, for a moment, I closed my eyes. There was an instant of extreme cold and total darkness. Suddenly, I was in deep, dreamless, peaceful sleep. I opened my eyes upon a very strange land. I immediately knew then I was on Mars. Not once did I question this fact. My mind told me I was on Mars, as your mind tells you that you are upon Earth. You do not question the fact. Nor did I. I found myself lying on a bed of yellow-colored grass that covered the land for kilometers. The time was near the middle of the day, and the sun was shining full upon me. It was warm. I decided to do a little exploring. Springing to my feet, I received my first Martian surprise. The effort to stand carried me into the Martian air to the height of about 1 meter. I landed softly upon the ground, however, without incident. I found that I must learn to walk all over again. My muscles were used to the gravity of Earth. Mars has less gravity. My attempts to walk resulted in jumps and hops, which took me into the air. I once landed on my face. I soon learned that it took much less effort for me to move on Mars than it did on Earth. Near me was a small, low wall. Carefully, I made my way to the wall and looked over. It was filled with eggs, some already broken open. Small, green creatures were in them. They looked at me with huge red eyes. As I watched the fierce-looking creatures, I failed to hear 20 full-grown Martians coming from behind me. They had come without warning. As I turned, I saw them. One was coming at me with a huge spear, with its sharp tip pointed at my heart.
This is Bob Doty. You have been listening to American Stories and our version of A Princess of Mars. The voice of John Carter was Shep O'Neill. Our program was written for radio, produced and directed by Paul Thompson. Join us again next week for the next part of the Edgar Rice Burroughs story, A Princess of Mars, on the special English program, American Stories, on the Voice of America.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.